Hi, my name is Stan Miller. I'm the PR and Analyst Relations Manager for Rockwell Automation in the EMEA region, and I am your guest host for this very special episode of the Management Perspectives podcast. Today, we'll be discussing how the energy industry is changing and how businesses are adapting to and embracing this new future. To help us expand our understanding, I'm excited to be joined by Simon McGinty, Regional Sales Director for EMEA at Sensia, and Sebastian Grau, our Regional Sales Vice President for the Middle East, Turkey, and Africa at Rockwell Automation. Welcome to the show, gentlemen. Perhaps you'd both like to introduce yourselves. Starting with Simon, please, could you tell us a little bit about yourself as well as Sensia?
Yeah, hi Stan. Thanks for the time here today. I come from the Rockwell background previously, and I joined this joint venture between Rockwell and Schlumberger, and we've been going for 2 years now. And it's a fairly young company, but it's been made up of a portion of Schlumberger and a portion of Rockwell, in order to fill a gap in the market. We think we have quite a nice niche as the only company that sort of bridges IT OT under the one roof. So exciting days, but young days.
And Sebastian, a little bit about you, please.
Yeah, thank you. Hi, guys. Thanks a lot for being here as well. So I'm based in Abu Dhabi, and as you say, right, taking care of the sales for Middle East, Turkey, and Africa for Rockwell. I joined the company close to 3 years now, and I have a background which is mainly on Middle East, Turkey, and Africa. I spent quite a lot of time in Africa, living in Lagos, been able to talk about energy, been able to talk about sustainability, been able to talk today on how oil and gas companies will be able to reach their targets through what we can propose in terms of solution on digitization or any type of efficiency and productivity we can find on their process is something that excites me a lot. It's something that I'm highly passionate by. So I cannot wait to hear your question and to be able to discuss with my dear Simon from Sensia about these great topics.
Thank you. Thank you, Seb. Thanks to you both. Well, let's begin by looking at the energy landscape of the future. Simon, can you explain to us how oil and gas companies are evolving?
Yeah. Sometimes like a tanker, sometimes quickly. And I would say that I guess there is an evolution that we see in the industry at the moment, you know, because most people are painfully aware of climate change. And you know, oil and gas companies, they do understand their role in it, and they do understand their responsibility. And I think for me, I see them taking action really in several ways in order to allow for that kind of change, that energy change. You know, some of them are rebranding to remove oil and gas out of their name, which, you know, it sends a message. But we see them also diversifying their portfolios. You know, these guys are investing in wind. One of the ones I like best is they're investing in hydrogen. And then obviously they are, because gas is so prolific. They really, gas is increasing with regards to production, because the energy companies are demanding that in order to get away from coal. So they are trying to get a better balance in their portfolio. The other thing I do see them is investing, you know, because a lot of them have made statements with regards to net zero footprints, and a lot of them have got targets. So very difficult for an oil and gas company to become net zero in carbon. But where we're seeing them investing is into carbon capture, you know, depleted wells, underground gas storage. You know, a lot of these guys are starting to put money up front in order that they can get a balanced scorecard on emissions. So, which I think, again, is a good sign that they're taking this seriously. But I think one of the things we do see, you know, from an optimization point of view, is these companies are taking a hard look at their assets, you know, and they're trying to rationalize those assets and the portfolios, and really to concentrate on the resilience of their core business. And by doing that, they're kind of taking out of service the sort of low producing, you know, high energy intensity well, and taking them out of service to reduce waste and emissions, and concentrating more the core business on the optimization of high producing low energy wells, And then creating their own digital oil field programs in order to get better control, decision making, and taking that next step on to having, you know, full control of their asset with regards to digitalization. So yeah, big changes, I think, market.
Thanks for that. So Sebastian, given that background, when you talk with customers, what are you hearing from them when it comes to getting these producers positioned for this the evolution and all those factors that Simon kind of laid out there?
Yeah, and Simon said it right. It's big changes that are happening, and that's change for the end users. That change in oil and gas, but in a lot of different industries, we need to adapt. And I think the key keywords is that, right? It's adaptation, flexibility. And this is linked to your capabilities, I believe, of anticipating what's the customer needs. And to do that, most important is just to listen, to really deeply understand the needs for the customers, to help them to take that decision with a strong consultancy approach as well. And to do that, you need to have a very deep understanding of their application, of their core business. So we must evolve as vendors, as company, as OEMs. We must evolve as per the needs of the market, as per the needs of our customers. Of course, we talk about sustainability today. We talk about cost reduction. We talk about growth. At the same time, we need to have a sustainable growth, right? And that's the key things that are said by all of our customers, and we are as vendors acting exactly as per the same. Anticipating what's their need is key. Ensuring that our structure, our organization, is supporting, helping our customer in the best way is the most important that what we can do. So at the end, we need to understand what are the short, middle, long-term KPIs that must be reached by our customers and adapt our portfolio of solutions and services to what they need. And at the same time, if I look at oil and gas industries, I believe that having companies, vendors that are, let's say, multi-industry or very touching a wide range of industries and segments, it's important to check what was applied in some other industries as very good best practice that can be directly applied to the oil and gas industry so that we can get the best of the others on proven business cases that demonstrate clear good results, and then achieve quicker, faster with the experience of a company like us, the good result for the companies that are changing and moving, right?
I think you're absolutely right. They are taking lessons from other industries. I'm not saying we're quick to change in the oil and gas market, but certainly, you know, there are great lessons that we see on standardization, for example, being brought into oil and gas, and it's just having a good impact on CapEx and OpEx. It's exciting when they start to look beyond the boundary.
Touched on in the a little bit earlier, but let's dig into it a little bit more if you guys wouldn't mind. And that's the topic of sustainability. It's such a critical issue right now. So I was hoping you could give us some additional insight on the role of the circular economy in driving sustainable development. And Sebastian, maybe you could tackle that first, and maybe Simon after Sebastian, if that's okay.
Of course, a very key part of the business models for now and for the future is linked to how capable we will be, all of us in the industry, to apply the good rules for the circular economy. And there is no question that if you do well on production, on distribution, and on conceptual level at every of these levels, you try to be more productive, more efficient. You try to recycle all what can be recycled. Then at the end, you have less waste. And at the end, you have a direct, very positive impact to the carbon footprint. So there is no discussion about applying a great circular economy rules going to have a direct impact on the sustainability pillar. I mean, at least this pillar of the sustainability, which is the environmental part, right? And then we see here that there is a lot of very good practice that are applied today in different industries. Simon talked about CCUS before, which is carbon capture, right? We've done a great job. It's in the metal industries with LanzaTech and with ArcelorMittal, where we were able to put in place a carbon capture equipment or solution that able to transform the carbon or the emissions that we got in directly in bioethanol, right? And such type of things from a waste or typical waste, being able to create value, a product that can be reused, that is not wasted, that is not just evaporating out of the atmosphere, is just what is what needs to be done at every level. So when we look at the circular economy, we need to deep dive on production side, on the distribution side, on the consumption side, and find the buckets of where we believe we can apply some technologies that are going to save waste, or reduce waste, that are going to recycle more of the potential emission we are doing. And for that, of course, we need to be able to measure the emissions to be able to cap and to understand where they are and what are the processes that are the most, non-efficient on that side, to detect them, measure them, and then by better control and new technology application, being able to reduce the waste. So direct impact on applying circular economy rules on the sustainability part. And we are doing that well. There is a clear awareness now at every level of the chain that we must do that.
Circular economy is for oil and gas, traditionally, they have to take lessons from a circular economy. I don't think they'll ever reach a proper circular economy in oil and gas, to be controversial, but I think they're taking great lessons from it. And, you know, we're seeing that they are using a sort of digital kind of infrastructure to in order to try and get that, as Seb was saying, the reduced wastage, the improved efficiencies. My last kind of rambling, I guess I mentioned the fact of energy intensity, being able to identify those areas which they can, you know, take out of service that use up and consume far too much energy for no benefit, and concentrate on low energy intensity type activities. You know, extending the life of equipment is absolutely key for oil and gas. I mean, we all know the equipment is expensive. It's a high capex industry. So, you know, getting more out of a pump, identifying faults faster, you know, making sure that there's no leakages or no emissions that go into the atmosphere, reducing flaring, you know, all these can add up to a far better circular economy, or as much as they can get. But I think what we see in oil and gas is we're not struggling with lack of data. We've got lots of digital aspects to our industry. It's bringing them together in order to get benefits. You know, and being able to improve the analytics by using the data, which will help, as we mentioned, to reduce the waste in the wells, slow the pump down that doesn't need to overproduce, you know, use less gas for injecting, the control the gas going into a well, you know, consider how much water you're using, you know, reduce the amount of water that you're injecting. All these little bits can really all add up. What we see now is the digital aspects of that can give that real-time information to really facilitate that increase in efficiency and reduce waste. So no, I think it's an exciting time. I think with the way that the energy companies are going, you know, the focus on waste, the focus on climate, you know, the lessons from circular economy, I think they all add to a better future, right? In my sounds a bit of a cliche, but I think there's definitely a move in the right direction.
True, but we can give even some more examples that are coming in my mind now, Simon, linked to oil and gas. Finally, when do we flare? I mean, there is some occasion where we can flare, right? But most of the time, flare are happening where we have unplanned shutdown, right? All the fact that we are able today to use better and better the data that we have on the assets, on the reservoir, on the pumps, on every single component that is on the wells. Finally, everything help us today to be able to take the right decision in anticipation, having a proactive maintenance, a predictive maintenance, I should say, that will help us to avoid to have such type of unplanned downtime. And finally, we don't have to flare, right? So more we are efficient, more we know our process, more we are able to anticipate what is the reaction and the evolution, the status of our asset, more finally we have a direct impact on our carbon footprint as well, right? And when I look at the solution like PEMS or what we call software SEMS, right? This software that are able to modelize the emissions of a plant, so that instead of using very costly and difficult to maintain analyzers everywhere, we are using a data and digitized model, a digital twin of your emission, right? That help us to modify certain criteria, to be able to control and why not in the next future reduce your emission. Well, we have plenty example that of good solutions that are put in place. Yeah.
This is a great discussion, and I'm sensitive to not getting in the way of it. But let's dig a little deeper when we're talking about digitalization. And Simon, if we could start with you on this, you've alluded to it, but let's, if you wouldn't mind taking us maybe another just a little bit deeper into how can the digitalization of oil fields, for example, contribute to sustainability goals? Let's tease that out a little bit more.
Well, yeah. If you imagine, you've got a lot of hundreds upon wells sitting in different spaces, be it in remote locations or fairly easy access locations, and we've seen examples of wells which have been sitting, pumping away, turning and working and not producing anything or only producing water. You don't want to make sure that you understand what's happening in that well to either slow a pump down or speed it up. So bringing the data back and getting easy analytics behind it can make a difference to that pump performance. We even see pumps which have been stood still for weeks on end because they haven't had any information that there's been a problem. So we're actually, by connecting all these different data sources, that intelligence, and we're able to then say, look, there's an issue here because the pump is overrunning, it's heating, it's vibrating. If we slow it down, it'll last a lot longer. If we slow it down, we'll get more production through it because it's cavitating and it's not producing, in association with the optimal performance. So even something as simple as speeding up and slowing a pump down, can sustainability give an extended life to the pump itself? It can produce at the optimal setting, because full speed doesn't mean full production. So getting the right balance point is core to that. We also see it in gas lift, where, if you have a gas lift well, for example, if you're over injecting gas, then you're not getting the production flow because the gas is circulating around the well. If you get the gas injection just to the right point, you're producing well, you're using the right amount of gas, and you're getting a very, very good optimal performance. If it's too little gas, then the oil doesn't flow because it doesn't break it down and reduce the viscosity. So just by being able to fine tune, these performance parameters, and bringing that data back to someone who can interpret those results either manually or automatically using AI, that gives a next step forward to make sure you're producing with less energy, less materials, and you're getting more out of your process.
I'm Stan Miller, and you're listening to the Management Perspectives Podcast, special edition. Today, I'm speaking with Simon McGinty of Sensia and Sebastian Grau from Rockwell Automation, and we're discussing how digitalization is helping businesses capitalize on the changes in the energy industry. Okay, so clearly digitalization is key to achieving some of these sustainability goals. And I think it'd be really helpful for our audience to understand how both Rockwell and Sensia are helping customers in the energy transition initiative, both through innovation and digital transformation. So with that in mind, maybe Sebastian, if you wouldn't mind starting us off and helping us understand that.
I believe the key topic here is that we've decided to build a solution that makes sense for our customers. With this partnership between Schlumberger and Rockwell, creating Sensia, we have created a company of experts, of specialized experts on some dedicated application. And that makes a lot of sense for our customers. All the feedback we are receiving from the oil and gas concern customers and partners, our solution and the things we are pushing is making a lot of sense for them. And this is what we want to do actually in Rockwell, is to ensure that we are. I'm going back on the first question and the first answer, which is through structures, vehicles that makes a lot of sense for our customers. We have decided to structure ourselves to better answer the real needs of the market, right? And this is exactly what's happening today. When I'm discussing with my Sensia colleagues, I see experts that can open a lot of doors as well for the Rockwell side in some customers that are maybe customers that are more oriented on metering side. And we were talking about Nigeria not so long ago with Simon, right? Where we have great deals there and great customers on metering. And it's opening the door as well for Rockwell to work more on the automation side, or to work more on the low voltage drives or high voltage drives, medium voltage drives. So we see a kind of 1 + 1 = 3 in this equation. And finally, this is all for the benefits of the customer at the end, that will have more and more coherence between the OT side, the IT side, with expert on both sides, Sensia benefiting about the digital understanding of Schlumberger, Rockwell having a better understanding of the IT side through a strong partnership with PTC or with Microsoft or with Cisco on CyberSec. All of that makes that our partnership means a lot for our customers and bring a lot to our customers.
Yeah, and no, I think, Seb, I think you hit the nail on the head there. If you look at this transition and this sort of digital transition, there's lots of companies looking at this. But what we've found is there's companies who are collaborating together in order to try and bring the right teams or companies to provide that IT-OT bridge. I guess what we did it slightly differently. We created a company, so that you've got one company to point at for the total kind of solution. And I guess we got the combination of petrotechnical and automation and measurement under the one umbrella. And this makes it easier to do what you need to do for a customer, and the customer can then see that the you've got the portfolio of expertise, which can really take that point of measurement in the field, transition it all the way through all the complex automation layers, and then easily hand that across to the IT layers, which are then doing your kind of fast loop optimization, mid loop optimization, and slow loop optimization, you know, within those kind of software architectures. And really the trick there is that integrated approach brings with it a value and a time to value not seen before, because having that integrated, you know, with multiple systems using the same data means that you don't have to then piece all the data and put the jigsaw together as was seen in the past, and have different systems trying to talk with other systems and exchange data, handshake the right information, being contextualized. Having one company that does that in the same group of people can bring a huge benefit on the time to get the value out of your data and out of your asset.
The results achieved of this collaboration, of this union, look like, whether it's from an end user or an OEM perspective? How does the Rockwell Sensia dynamic in helping customers achieve their own objectives, whether it's cost reduction, operational efficiency, sustainability? I mean, any examples you'd like to highlight to really kind of bring that, you know, bring what we're talking about to life?
Yeah, we've got a fairly recent example, which was quite an interesting one. And this is where a lot of oil companies we deal with are based in a country. Yeah. And there are data residency laws for different countries, and we work within those parameters. But I think the case which I found really interesting just recently was we had a customer whose headquarter and their management team are based in London, and their engineering center was based in Turkey. But the asset that they're producing was managed by a third party, and the asset was based in Iraq. So, you know, as you can imagine, visualizing, you know, analytics and getting the right data in order to do the right reporting and the right analysis could be quite complex when you're transferring a lot of data between countries. What we did was we managed to, you know, take the local control and the local data, which was being done in the asset, both from the wells and the kind of early production facility. We extracted the data, we brought it onto the cloud real time. We produced analytics for the real time analysis to understand production efficiencies. This gave full visibility to the engineering teams in Turkey and headquarters, because they could easily dial in to see what was going on and what was happening. Well, when I say dial in, that shows my age. You know, nobody dials in any longer. They would have gone on to the network and then had a very easy portal into seeing what was happening. And they would have some KPIs that they were, you know, running their third party production company with. And then, the engineering center could tell what was happening and tell the speeds and the durations of all the different pumps and the different assets and how much was flowing through the separation train, you know, how well the efficiencies on the dehydration was working, much water they were producing. So all that was clearly visible from a very remote location. And then finally, that data, that real-time data, was contextualized into their production reporting system, what we call PDMS, which then generated from that same data all the reporting and their allocations and their monitoring on the efficiencies, you know, any well loss analysis and any other advanced analytics that they wanted to do. So, as I said, by having that petrotechnical knowledge, we knew how to use the data. We knew how to get it from the automation knowledge. We brought it into the cloud. We then could easily make that data and analytics available to the wider community, again, going across many international borders. So that's just one example of, you know, where I think this, the power of this can really be used to bring benefit.
What kind of benefit that is coming to my mind now, and I guess, Simon, we were together in the same meeting talking about that not so long ago, is what we call the Mac OEM, where this program, for instance, cannot be applied by a company, a single company in being in the same place of the world or a single place of the world. You need to have the power of a network like the one we have between Rockwell, Sensia, and Schlumberger to apply such type of program. And this type of program is touching OEM, end user, EPCs, contractors, and bringing benefits to all of them. And I will explain how. It's all about increasing the speed and the time to market, and especially for projects like early production facilities, for instance, where the time to produce, the time to be on the market is reduced from 5 years to a normal project to 1 year and a half to 2 years. You need to have a program that is run by the OEM, by the vendors, and this is what we are doing today. Is that every vendors in the world, machine manufacturers, OEMs, that gonna bring their machine in the project, in the EPF, for instance, will be able to drive their machines, to control the machines with exactly the same architecture, the same controller, the same library. So we are taking the responsibility to ensure that in a very complex program, or a very complex solution, having hundreds of vendors, we will coordinate with all of them to ensure that all of them, well, they will bring the machine, they will connect seamless because they will talk the same language, same protocol, same library, same language, right? And this is what we call Mac OEM. And I believe we see here the benefits on how having the same proper coordination and the same language for all the machine builders bringing to the single project can decrease by far the time of engineering, the time of project management to organize all of that, right? Because it's seamless, it will be connected without any burden. So here I see as well a good benefits in terms of increasing the speed and time to market for our customers by using an approach like a Mac OEM.
Yeah, we saw an example of that, Seb. I don't know if you're aware of this one. We did this for a large British global oil and gas company. And they had an FPSO off the coast of Senegal. And we worked with them on this Mac OEM Mac program. So we took about 40 to 50 different packages. And if you look at an FPSO, it's built up of different packages all brought together. So we worked with the package suppliers. We standardized all their controls, the architecture, the network, the languages, the topologies, the alarming, the network security. And we worked with about 40 different package suppliers in order to standardize such that when they came to site, they were able to jump on the Ethernet ring that was going around the FPSO and very quickly, you know, became visible in order to reduce commissioning times. And the next subsequent, so that really helped reduce the number of errors, during commissioning. It shortened the commissioning time. And it also meant that the package supply and commissioning of the controls, which tends to be at the very, very end of any commissioning cycle where pressure is the highest, that was substantially reduced and took away a lot of the risk. But one of the benefits now that they've moved on from the build is that they are able to, you know, have these packages, you know, tied into a single network, coming back to land, the land-based operations, and they can fault find, you know, across all those different packages and do any modifications or updates instead of having to send someone by helicopter out to do a repair. And that, again, saves a substantial amount of money and time and carbon footprint.
Then this one will be a highly sustainable FPSO, efficient and sustainable, because if I remember well, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, we have a PEMS as well, an emission monitoring system for this FPSO at the same time in Senegal. So yeah, very good reference.
Great examples, guys. Really great insights in this discussion, and really interesting overview of what's happening in the industry. So I just wanted to thank you both for joining me today and sharing your perspectives on these topics. And thanks to our listeners. I hope you found this discussion as interesting as I have. You've been listening to the Management Perspectives Podcast. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Twitter, where we publish all of our podcasts and blogs. And if you've enjoyed the podcast, please rate and review us, because this really helps the show.